Hey guys, we are rewinding our favorite episodes from 2025. And not only did we get this big guest, a big get for us,
yeah,
but he invited us to his place.
I know.
And he had an entire studio set up for us. And so
that never happens.
It never does. And this guy's in the headlines a lot too. It's Bob Jordan.
And he was in the headlines more after he was on with us, by the
way.
Was he really? Yeah, he made headlines.
No, he did. You're right about that. Yeah, he did break some news. Bob Jordan's the CEO of Southwest Airlines, based at Dallas Love Field. And if you haven't noticed, Southwest has been going through some transition,
yeah,
one might say.
Yeah, like, you know, you're paying for those bags now that you used to always get those two bags free, and that seemed like it would last forever, and it didn't.
And Southwest has decided, listen, we got to make some money. Our investors want us to make a little bit more than we're making right now. Our stock price used to be higher. And so Bob Jordan is leading that charge, and it's making a lot of a lot of waves for people who are loyal Southwest flyers.
Active investors helped to bring this along and put some pressure.
Investors.
Activists, I'm sorry. Yeah. Activists and investors helped to bring a lot of pressure to bear and made them make some changes to make the company more solid, more
sure.
profitable, et cetera. Although some of those things may not sit well with all customers.
But we are just weeks away from some more big changes here.
Yep. January 27th, it starts, of 2026. They will no longer just have this free-for-all where you choose your own seat when you get on a Southwest Airlines plane. They're going to not have that ABC boarding process anymore that you might be used to. They'll be going to a group 1 through 8 like a traditional airline would, and you'll have your seat assigned to you ahead of time, and you'll have the option to choose from standard, preferred, or extra legroom when you book your tickets. And so it's a big change for Southwest. Oddly, though, and I thought this one would not sit well. I remember Bob telling us in this podcast, I don't want to give it all away, but he said that, you know, obviously they did focus group, they listened to what people
sure.
had to say, and that people were on board with having assigned seating, that it was popular.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one. That's the only thing I always cringed about Southwest. I don't want to get on. Is this seat taken? It
yeah.
is? Okay, all right, no problem. I'll move to the next seat and ask the
right.
same question. Southwest, another update, too, is Southwest has already announced its first ever lounge.
It's supposed to be a nice one too.
In Hawaii.
Two levels.
Yeah. So
Honolulu. Does it get better?
That's certainly a reason.
And we're supposed to hear more about that here in the weeks ahead as to, you know, the timeline on that, but we know it's well underway. Maybe it happens in 2026. That would be a huge change for Southwest, and people are already talking about potential future lounges. And
yeah.
I've seen some cities thrown out: Baltimore, Nashville, Denver, San Diego, Las Vegas, Phoenix. So
and
a lot going on. And they're adding transatlantic flights. We talked to him about that in this as well.
Yeah, how about Europe? You know, would they fly to Europe? And you know what he told
Make
us?
That money.
He said, listen, we would not be talking about it publicly if it wasn't something under serious consideration. He said the same thing about lounges when we taped this a few months ago, too. It's a fascinating sit-down interview with Bob Jordan on his home turf. And he let us in there to you know, get the skinny on what's happening there.
Yeah, we sat down for an interview. He gave us assigned seats just to get ready for it. You know, you sit there and you sit there.
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer. For another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey guys, welcome to Y'allitics. This is a first for us. We've had a lot of firsts lately here.
Yeah,
but the
good
fact,
firsts too, which
good
is
first.
Nice.
Yeah, we're at Southwest Airlines,
yeah.
Their global headquarters.
They let us in.
Love Field, they let us in.
This is the first for y'all to be here?
This is the first time
I've
be
been
in
here
studio.
Before, but okay. I've never been in your studio yeah. before. It's a really nice studio.
It is.
Yeah, this is really nice.
We built this just for you guys.
Yeah, for Y'allitics, of course.
I finally got here then.
So we're honored to have Bob Jordan here, Southwest Airlines President and CEO. I've talked to you before, but thanks for joining us on Y'allitics. Really
yeah.
appreciate it. Normally we have beer on the podcast, and I know you have it in your in-flight offerings, but we got some Deja Blue, of course,
which
ginger ale.
Which I can tell you is not beer.
Exactly. Deja Blue, and then I don't drink these the fruit juices. What are you having, Wheeler?
I'm going to do a Deja Blue.
I'm going to have one, too, and I brought that, and then...
Thank you. This is what they call product placement.
This, you know
it
what?
Is, absolutely.
Yeah. Deja Blue, if you're watching, Y'allitics will definitely take you
Wait, you have snacks,
here.
Too.
We have snacks.
Wow.
I'm on board
these are
well,
really good.
Too.
Have you
I
had these?
I haven't had these yet, no. These are...
So it's Maui Monk chips?
It's a pretzel. It's kind of a spicy, mustardy, sweet pretzel. It's really good.
Really?
Yeah. So.
And we were just talking about Maui and Southwest's presence there in the Hawaiian Islands. How's that going, by the way?
It's going great. I mean, our culture at Southwest and what we do for our customers and how we treat them fits right in with the culture, and we've been well received. We took our time. You know, you were there with us.
Yeah.
And we spent 2 years learning about Hawaii before we ever took a flight, and it's paid off well. We've tinkered with our service. We had a lot of inter-island service, so we've tinkered with the schedule. But no, it's going really good, and we've added red eye flying.
Right.
In the last 4 or 5 months, and that's proven to be really attractive as well.
Is there less inter-island flying now? Because that was kind of the whole purpose.
Just a little bit. I just call it. Yeah, we've tinkered with the schedule, but no, there's been no wholesale change. But the good thing is we're seeing strong load factors. We're seeing strong load factors on the red eyes that I talked about. Hmm. Are you red eye fans?
Yeah. But, well, if I can get a seat on a flight, I'm a fan. So,
yeah. I'll do whatever it takes.
I'll take whatever it is. So actually, on that flight, the last time I saw you, we flew back from the Big Island to Dallas, I believe. Was it straight back?
You could because of the load on it. That aircraft is not. The aircraft is not designed to do that on a scheduled basis. Yeah. But because of the number of folks that were on the aircraft, we were able to do it.
Mm. Yeah,
you would not want to do that with a full plane.
Probably not.
Sadly, I wasn't invited to that trip.
Yeah, maybe next time, Wheeler. Maybe next time.
These pretzels are amazing.
They are
good.
So let's just dive into the deep end of the pool right here too. You guys have been in the news a little bit lately.
Just a little.
I've noticed you in the news, so we thought we'd give you a call and see if we could come over and talk to you about the transformation going on here. You guys are charging for bags now, something I didn't think I'd ever see. I think I've asked you and your predecessor, Gary Kelly, is this ever going to happen? Absolutely not. Ending open seating, the premium seating up front now you guys are going to be offering. The fares and the fees, Bob, no longer make Southwest different. And I have a lot of friends who fly you guys constantly. I said, listen, I'm going to go talk to Bob Jordan today. What should I ask him? And the common thread for all of them is, what makes you guys different anymore?
Yeah. I think I'd start with the changes, and I'll come back to your question. But, this is a wholesale transformation of the company and our customer proposition. At the end of the day, no matter what you think, what we think, what I think sitting here, you've got to follow the customer. Mm. And it's really clear that our customers want changes. They want other options in the cabin. They want assigned seating. I mean, 80% of our customers told us they want assigned seating. 85% of customers that don't fly us want assigned seating.
Huh.
And the number one reason people leave us or won't book us is because of open seating. So
it's been like that forever, hasn't it?
But you can't ignore what 80%, 85% of your customers are telling you, no matter what you think about your product. So we're moving to the customer. And the customer is different post-COVID. You see a lot more demand for premium. There's a lot less, the peaks and the valleys are really different. So you're seeing us adding the extra leg room, our version of premium, and it's because there's huge demand. You've heard every other airline talk about the demand for premium products. Yeah. Hmm. So meeting the customer is really the purpose of all of this. And so you'll see more choice when you book us today. You'll see a very bare bones fare that has a lot of restrictions, and we know we have customers who want that. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you'll see customers who want a premium experience. And the other thing I would tell you is we won't stop here, so we're going to keep changing. And in no announcements, other than this is a point in the journey, it's not the end point. So if our customers are telling us they want something else, we'll continue to look at it. We know where we are really popular, and customers love us. Cities like Dallas or Nashville or Austin, I could go on and on. That's the beauty of Southwest. We're big in so many places, and our customers love Southwest. We know there, though, there are folks that want a lounge, or they want a business class offering, or they want an airline that can take them on a long-haul destination to Europe, and we can't serve those. And so even if you love us, we force you to another airline. We force you to split your wallet. We force you to hold somebody else's co-brand card. And we're just not going to do that. So we're not going to be everything, but we're going to keep pursuing the customer. Now, back to what do we stand for? You know, I would argue the heart of Southwest Airlines wasn't plastic boarding cards or even open seating. The heart of Southwest Airlines is our service that we provide and how we treat the customer. We have the best domestic network. More nonstops to more places. We're the largest in half of the top 50 cities in the country. We have tremendous service offered by the best people. I'll challenge you to find a company that has better people than Southwest Airlines. We have the best loyalty program. We have really, really good fares. We have tremendous operating reliability. I mean, we were the lowest level of canceled flights last year, best on-time performance. So the airline is operating really well. So we have a lot that we stand for here at Southwest. But number one, it's how we treat you, the service that we provide, and again, it all comes through our people.
So a few things there, though. So yeah. You would say, what you're saying is, despite all the changes, including on things that we said over the years that we'd never change, Southwest is still Southwest.
Southwest is not necessarily even the product that we provide. And never say you're not, you can't say we will never change. Mm. I mean, Herb always said, you change or you die. Mm-hmm. And saying no just restricts you. Now, what you can't say no to is we won't, we'll always have the best people. We'll always provide the best service. We'll always treat you like a human being. We'll treat you like you would like to be treated and how you would treat others. That's the heart. You know, Colleen always said the golden rule. It's really simple. Just treat others the way you would like to be treated. Our people go out of the way all the time. I get emails all the time or hear stories on the aircraft of extraordinary things that a flight attendant or a somebody at the airport has done for a customer, accompanied them to the hospital because they weren't feeling good, those kinds of things. And you just don't see that anywhere else. And that is what we stand for. It's not a product attribute.
As a consumer, though, if I'm booking an airline flight out of Dallas-Fort Worth, let's say, the Metroplex, I always
say the airport.
The Metroplex. I want to clarify that. You know, I almost said DFW, but I always knew South. I knew what I could get with Southwest. Hey, if I needed to take my family, if I need to make sure that I didn't spend too much, yep. I could get bags fly free there. As a consumer, what makes Southwest different though today? Well, I'm trying to find the cheapest fare,
on the fares, we literally check multiple times every single day how do our fares compare in the market, and we are. More than half the time, we're lowest or equal to every other carrier, not head to head, but against the whole rest of the field, so to speak. We recently added other channels. So right at a year ago, we had a Google Flight Search, mm-hmm. and we've added Expedia, and we added Skyscanner. And one of the things that you want to do is show up on the first page. Mm-hmm. And we show up on the first page more than any other airline. Mm-hmm. So the low fares are there. And if you want bags fly free, to continue to fly free, all you have to do is have the credit card in your wallet, period. And you still have free bags. All you have to do is fly us. You know, anybody with any level of status has free bags. So, but again, you've got folks who want the bare bones product. And the other side of this, if we're going to aspire to have the margins, the financial margins that we want, you have to meet the needs of the customer so they'll buy you. And you also have to be careful about what you give away. Mm-hmm. And so, again, all you have to do is hold that credit card and bags fly free on Southwest Airlines.
If I'm reading between the lines correctly here, so you're saying you follow the customer, you give customers what they want, and right away I think, what customer says I want you to charge me for bags when you didn't before? But what you're saying is there is a customer out there that is not going to check bags, and they want you to be able to
cut
that
bare bones at the lowest fare.
Okay, yeah.
That's one of the things that's occurred in the airline industry over the last decade is you went from everybody, in every seat in the tube is kind of the same, yeah. going back decades to at some point somebody introduced first class mm-hmm. or business class. Then at some point somebody introduced extra legroom or a main cabin plus kind of product. At some point somebody squeezed the seat spacing at the back of the mm-hmm. aircraft. At some point somebody introduced products that you could buy on board. So it's always changing. And I love our core product, what I experienced when I came to Southwest, but you've got to evolve because nothing stays the same. So thinking that the product can be the same in 1980 and in 2025 implies that our customers are the same in 2025 as they were 45 years ago, and it's just not the case.
Should your predecessors have bitten the bullet 17 years ago and acted bag fees then when everyone else did? Yep. That way, you wouldn't be the lone guy out here at the very end.
It's really no. I think our policies have been right for the times, and you can never answer the what if question,
sure.
right? Whether it's any question in life, you never know. I am 100% focused on moving forward. We were just in Denver last week and had a chance to talk to the local Denver station. And so we had 600 or 700 folks there in attendance, and I had a chance to be out and talk to customers as they hit the ticket counter and check bags, and the enthusiasm with our people over where we're headed is incredible, because they see this. I mean, they talk to customers who want a different product. They talk to customers who want assigned seating. And so they're where you might think that we'd have a lot of employees that are worried about the change in the product, they're really enthusiastic about where we're headed, and they want to know what's coming next, like we kind of hinted at there.
I would imagine, though, that you have a lot of purists out there as well, and you mentioned, you know, the emails that you get, the glowing ones about the service that people have received. What have you seen, you know, a fair amount of response from people who are critical of the things that have been changed, and how much do you take that into account, and what do you do about those responses?
You know, we're in a business that provides constant and instant feedback. I would just tell you,
familiar with that.
You can't fly more than 100 million customers a year, half a million customers a day a lot of times, and not get feedback. And of course, I've received a few, but it's been handfuls. And on both sides, you know,
respond to them?
I respond to a lot, sometimes to the horror of folks around me, but I tend to respond to a lot. I try to respond to every employee thing that I get. It may take me a few days, and we do take it into consideration. I think it starts with, we survey our customers every single day. How was your flight? You know, we do Net Promoter Score, it's basically a kind of a service indicator. You've heard of it, NPS. We do it at every point in the journey. So we measure the NPS of your booking experience, your check-in experience, the TSA, in-flight, bag check, to understand where we can be better. And we do that every single day at every airport. And so there's constant feedback going on. You've also got to be driven by common sense, too. You can survey yourself to death. And so if you look at something like the move to assigned seating, when 85% of customers are saying, we want assigned seating, that's pretty darn clear.
Is that going to be faster? Is it going to be more efficient? What is that going to be?
In terms of the boarding? Yeah, we obviously we're founded on operational efficiency, turning the aircraft quickly, using the aircraft a lot, having low block times. And so we did a lot of physical simulations of different types of boarding, and we did millions of computer-based simulations of boarding. And everything tells us that the new boarding and assigned seating will be equal to or faster than the current product. We've also invested in the operation like crazy. So just go across the runway here to Love Field, and you'll see these really large screens at called RIDS, Ramp Information Displays, at every gate, indicating countdown to the turn and bags that are weighed, all kinds of information to the ramp and to pilots and to those working the turn. We just turned on technology where, through their device in hand, the pilots, the flight attendants, and those working the turn can be in contact with each other. So rather than somebody saying, hey, there's a bag waiting up here to go downstairs, they can hit a button and indicate that the bag needs to be to be picked up. We've added technology around managing that, where our pilots in flight can basically see turbulence ahead of them. We've taken the paper out of the turn. We took paper fuel tickets out of the turn. So in addition to the new system, the assigned seating is going to be faster. We've invested like crazy in the operation, both technology and processes. So no, I feel really good about the changes. And we've said we're gonna implement assigned seating in the third quarter, selling it for 26 flights that began early in 26. So, you know, we're sitting here roughly 60 days out from that sale period. So, and a lot of technology, a lot of processes, but we're looking good.
Bob, what metrics are you going to use, though, to show that the transformation's working? What's success for you? I mean, to push for profitability, but that number's infinite, right?
Yeah, I think it's always bounded. So you want to have the right financial returns. If you don't, I mean, we're a for-profit business for shareholders. And if you don't have the right level of profitability, you can't invest in the business. You can't buy airplanes. You can't pay people well. You can't, you know, all the things that we want. You can't invest in the customer service. So you've got to be profitable at the right levels. And we have a history of being at or near the top in terms of operating margin and return on invested capital. And that is our aspiration to get back there. But that can't be the only thing that drives you. We look at employee satisfaction. Obviously, we look at customer satisfaction. And it comes through things like the surveying I talked about every single day. It also comes through our people. Are they getting the Chase Rapid Rewards card? Are they buying the products that we're offering? Are we competitive with our fares? Is our load factor growing? Is the desire for Southwest Airlines to enter this or that market growing? So you look at it in a number of ways, and financials is just one of the metrics.
Bob, how many years have you been here now? 36? Is it 36?
37.
37 years now.
Nobody's counting, it sounds like.
Speculate on my age.
We don't do that on this podcast. We don't want anybody doing it back.
Yeah, 37 years.
Long time with one company. You've held so many positions in management, more than a dozen. I think it's like 15 different ones before this job. And in the past, you led these efforts to prevent Southwest from ever having to lay off an employee.
Yeah.
And for a long time, this airline went without ever doing that, which was an incredible distinction. We did get to that for the first time this year, though, with 1,750 employees. I think it's going to wrap up this month, isn't it? In June, where that will be done. What was that like? Was that for you the hardest of the changes?
Yeah. So just start with, I've been here a long time. I started here as a programmer. So, and I wasn't great at that, so I kept moving on. I'm not sure I was good at, I've had a lot of jobs, and you can interpret that multiple ways. But we were, I think, 88 aircraft and 7,000 people, and now, all those years later, we're a lot larger. And I think what we do in revenue in a week today was what we did in a year. Wow. Then, actually less. And so all of that is so different, but the company is still the same company. Same values. I come to work every day. Just walk around. People are smiling. They want to be here. They like each other. They
it's
enjoy coming
group.
To work. And that comes through whether you're sitting here in the headquarters or whether you're sitting on a flight, you see that. And that has never changed at Southwest, how we treat each other and the family feeling. So, when you get to, we have to consider really hard things like a layoff. That's really tough because we are a family. And but when you have to take tough actions, like in this case, cost and driving efficiency in the company, we start with no one can make that decision but me. You're not going to look to any other person or leader to decide that that's going to be something that Southwest is going to do, whether it's our first or not. And my hope would be, obviously, that was our first and our last. But it wasn't really about costs. It was about being more efficient. We have got to be faster and faster in terms of how we execute and make decisions and drive customer products and all those things have to. There's in the business environment today, you don't have years to think about things and construct things. Things have to be much shorter cycle. And over time, in a company, things just build up. You fund everything on a one-off makes sense. You fund something, you fund something else, and you build capabilities and you build departments and you build two different departments that kind of do the same thing, and you look up and you go, wow, I've got, for a company that stands for efficiency, I have a lot of things that are not very efficient. So we started with, we've got to be better as a company in terms of how we execute. And we took basically a bottoms-up look at, if we were starting over, would we still fund that? Would we still put that in that place? Things that for years we have known that we've got that duty in three locations and we just haven't done the hard step of deciding to consolidate it. So it was really a drive for efficiency. I mean, an example would be before, our typical leader had a low number of direct reports. So what we would call low spans, 38% of leaders had low spans. After, that is now 2%. And that's just it's just a statistic. But what it means is that decisions go through fewer levels, and you're just going to have pace. And so you look at the things that were done, I guess about 10 days ago now, with the implementation of the new basic product. And we did add bag fees. It changed every digital channel. There was so much work, and That work was completed from start to finish, and I mean start to implementation in 100 days. Hmm. Technology, that's processes, fast, yeah. Everything. And I would argue that that would be impossible without being more efficient. And that includes our technology folks who did also have layoffs. So again, there's no way to overstate how difficult the decision was and how impactful it was on people. But you just have to make really tough decisions, and we hope to not do that again.
So there are obviously a lot of Southwest fans who are in the Metroplex area here too, in addition to the employees. They've seen the news. Elliott Management is the company that's pushing you guys to be more profitable. They now have seats on the board. Do you think your job's on the line at all?
You know, first off, I think I'd start with Elliott is a shareholder. They're a large shareholder of Southwest Airlines. And every shareholder is somebody that we listen to. That was the first time, obviously, we've been into an activist campaign,
sure.
which is totally different.
But, it's an experience, isn't it?
It's an experience. But we listen to all of our shareholders. And at the core, the company needs to be more profitable. That is not wrong. But I would also tell you, talking to the Elliott folks, that they'll tell you, we don't know airlines. We just know that this company has a lot of value and can drive higher profitability levels and higher returns. And, we went through a process where we got basically a workout with Elliott and put part of their slate on our board. I will tell you, there are not Elliott directors. You know, I go to board meetings, and it's not Southwest directors. No. People have this vision that there's a table and there's two sides and people are yelling at each other. Everybody comes to the table as a director of Southwest Airlines. Number one, that's their duty.
Sure.
That's their literal duty as a board member. And then number two, they want to do good for the company, do good for our people, do good for our customers, and do good for our shareholders. Now, has that process pushed us? Absolutely. I would be absolutely lying if I didn't say otherwise. Because look at the pace, I just talked about the pace of innovation, the pace of changes. But that's different than Elliott or any other shareholder is driving this change. Mm-hmm. They are not doing that. They are pushing on pace at mm-hmm. Southwest and making hard decisions.
But do you think, have things stabilized here? It seems to me they've stabilized, but I'm not on the inside like you are. And if they have stabilized, do you feel a little more licensed to execute some of these changes without, looking over your shoulder the whole time?
Well, the changes, all of the things that we've contemplated and are doing were changes part of our transformation before Elliott ever showed up. And so we had an investor day last September, which was well underway before June when we got into this activist thing. So nothing presented there was because of Elliott. So that's just a misconception that they're driving changes. And
now, did that just speed it up?
Yeah, I think really what they've added and the push here has been on pace. Now, for me, it's hard to explain, but I'm not a high-stress person to start with. I love coming to work. I love Southwest Airlines. I'm a type A, very driven to get things done. But at the end of the day, my self-worth isn't tied up in any job. Again, that's hard to explain sometimes because I love Southwest. I love our people. And I want us to be successful. And we will be successful. So this isn't about Bob. This is about Southwest Airlines. It's about our customers. It's about our employees. Now, I will tell you, we are aligned in the things that we're doing. And we are aligned in the pace that you're seeing. And we're aligned in our goals, both to meet the customers' needs and to meet our financial demands. And I do think, given how... how unusual that period was last summer, when you're fighting with a shareholder before the
publicly,
things are far more stable. We have a stable board. We have a plan. We're executing that plan really, really well. The operation is running really, really well. Our people are behind it, and so we're definitely in a good spot here.
But Bob, for a while there, publicly, and this did play out very publicly, it was about Bob. And we were seeing, that this hedge fund wanted you out, and you saying, no, I'm not going to bow to the pressure from a hedge fund. First of all, this is a tough job, whether you're a stressed person or not. Did you think about it at any point? Like, you know, maybe it is time to go move on and do something else.
You know, I thought about nothing other than what is the right thing for Southwest? What's the right thing for our people, our customers, and our shareholders? Again, it just, it's not about me. So I can't imagine the thing, you know, preservation thinking.
Yeah.
Because it's suddenly then completely the wrong motive.
Right.
I mean, you shouldn't be in a job like this to start with if your motive isn't anything but serving the company and serving your owners and serving your customers and serving your employees. If you have any other motive, these are tough jobs, like every job. I tell folks every single job at an airline is really hard. Just go try any one of them for the day. I have one of the easiest. Because I'm not on the front line loading bags and doing really hard things. But if you come to a job like this for any other motive, then you shouldn't be doing it.
That's good.
It will distort your decision-making.
That's really good clarity to help make decisions like that. I am curious, though, did you hear from other CEOs? Because I can almost hear some of them applauding in C-suites like, yes, take that stand, because other CEOs go through this as well. And it's a very tough position to be in, to be squeezed like that publicly.
You know, we...
Did you get support?
Because it's so different, because we'd not been through an activist campaign. And these are campaigns.
Yeah.
You know,
It's almost political.
There's PR going on, and there's a lot of effort to understand what your other shareholders are thinking. So part of going into something like this is just learning, how does this work? And so we talked to others that have been through it. You have helpers, you have folks that are advising you on what to do. But again, you got to back up and think about what is the right thing for the company, and not succumbing to maybe an easy answer because it's easy, and holding out for the right answer for the company. And the answer wasn't hold out for Bob. The answer was hold out to stay in control of what this place stands for. Don't let somebody, and again, this isn't about Elliot, but you change all of your ownership, all of your leadership, all of your connection back to Herb and Colleen, so to speak, and you risk what's core, our values, being put into play. And that's what I was fighting to resist, was not losing control, in that not losing the ability to keep in place what makes this place different, which is our values and how we treat our people and how we treat our customers.
Let's talk about the carrot you dangled the other day. International flying.
Which
yeah,
one?
Yeah, right. Well, I love talking about expansion. Every time I talk to you guys, I love talking about this. But you guys asked for a permit to fly more international flights. You were at Skift or somewhere. You were talking about... you know, we don't have anything we're going to reveal today, but you know, we would look at
that. Yeah, I think it was the Bernstein Conference.
Is that what it was? Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, how soon would you anticipate revealing something like that, number one? And secondly, the question everyone asks, I mean, you guys are the 737 airline. What other type of aircraft would you look at?
Yeah, again, I think you start with, if you don't put some constraints on yourself, you'll change too many things. Mm-hmm. If you handcuff yourself, we will never do this, you can really miss things that are key to your future, key to your customers. So, but what I've been trying to say, without, you know, kind of the wink of we're looking at it, is, yeah, again, there's nothing to announce, but it's just, we're not stopping with what you have heard so far. So nothing specific, other than if our customers lead us to certain places, then we're going to explore that. And the examples I've used, because they're so obvious, is if it's clear that our customers in key cities demand a lounge, as an example, rather than say we would never do that, we'll take a look at it.
Yeah.
If our customers demand another level of premium, if they demand long-haul flying. So a piece of this is just saying it's obvious, which is if you say no to all those things, we're restricting what we can do for customers, our appeal, and we're restricting our growth because of that. And so you can't start with no. You've got to start with it's on the table. So if we did, you know, so we are looking at how we expand the network, and that could include one day long haul flying. And because we know in some locations, you know, some of the top destinations that we can't get you to are obviously the Londons, the Paris of the world. Step one, you pursue partnerships.
You have
That's
two of
those.
That's
the easier route. Yeah, we've announced Iceland Air, Air China, and then we have others in the hopper that we're not quite ready to announce today.
Other international partners?
Yeah. We're working on other partners.
So could you be part of an alliance like we see?
I think that's tougher because of the restriction of the alliance, but but you'll see us continue to add partners. The obvious next question after partnerships is, well, what flying would we want to do ourselves? Mm-hmm. So that would bring with it another aircraft type, the 737, except on a very small basis, can't do that flying. It would have to bring with it other types of service. It would have to bring with it probably catering. So it's not a non-complex question.
It's a big one. How far off is that, though? I mean, is that 5-10 years off, do you think, or is it less than that?
You know, it's impossible. I think it would be it'd be logical. I feel like I'm winking a lot here. It'd be logical.
Wink all you want.
It'd be logical to assume that I wouldn't be speculating if these things were decades away, right? Okay. On one bound, because it would be no reason to even talk about it if it's so far away. On the other bound, the type of aircraft that you would need to do that mission, I mean, they have 5-6 year lead times just to place an order. So it maybe kind of helps you, but that's also why I think you've heard me say at some of these conferences, part of what we're doing is just ensuring that we always have a 5-year plan in place. We always know where we're heading for the customer. And it's really basic. It's simply because a lot of these things that we're considering, that's the lead time. It could be that long to get an aircraft. It could take you 4 years to put in this kind of capability. So if you look up one day and go, wow, we need to be in Europe right now, as an example only, well, that could be 5 or 6 years away just by kind of the natural course of the capability. So you just can't do that. You can't be cut short like that.
I was talking to somebody really smart recently, though, who says to keep expanding like you want to expand, you need slots several miles away from here at DFW International. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, that's a local Dallas question because the couple of restrictions that remain from the Wright Amendment, you know, the size of Love Field and then international flying out of Love Field is obviously that applies only to Dallas. I think the bigger question is we've gotten a lot, and I've talked about it, is would we want to be at DFW one day? And, yeah, we've been open that we do want, you know, kind of a handful of gates at DFW. Mm-hmm. They're building Terminal F, and that'll provide some re-racking of gates throughout the airport. So our interest in DFW continues. But again, it's a handful of gates. So it's small in the grand scheme of the network.
And on those international alliances, one other follow-up. Right now, the way it's set up with Iceland Air and China Air, can I use my rapid rewards points to book on those?
Not yet. So that's there are coming enhancements to allow you to book those through Southwest.com and the app. And then the next enhancement would be you can use your rapid rewards points, but you cannot do that today. And back on Dallas too, I forgot to mention, you know, we recently secured a long-term lease with the city of Dallas at Love Field, takes us through 2040. And that allowed, number one, really grateful to the city manager and the mayor for making that a priority and working with us and just being a terrific partner. Number two, that surety allows us to keep investing in Love Field. So you're gonna see us working with the city put some real improvements over time into Love Field. Mm-hmm. So anyways, good, really good for our customers, good for Southwest Airlines, good for the city.
So we may see some changes here at Love Field too.
Yeah, what you're gonna see is over time, A continual improvement in the customer experience.
Maybe a lounge. Who knows if they push for it enough.
Nothing announced today.
I want to ask you what effect you see right now with tariffs and with people with economic concerns. There's been a lot of talk in the airline industry that people are pulling back. How big of a concern is this for you?
Yeah, the tariffs themselves. There's a lot of uncertainty. So there's no. Nothing to report there in terms of the price we pay for an aircraft or engine maintenance or something like that. We do things like engine maintenance overseas. So that has not been the impact. The impact has been the uncertainty. You know, the consumer gets uncertain, and one of the first things you can do is stop spending money. Mm-hmm. If you and one of those things is air travel. So we've been public. The demand, what we said at first quarter earnings, so April, is the demand that we were seeing in April at that time was about 6% lower than we thought when we set the plan at the beginning of the year. So that's a big drop. Mm-hmm. And we saw, you know, a first drop in February in terms of demand, maybe a, you know, a second drop in March and a third in April. And it's stable, but it's not back to the levels that we expected this year. So you're seeing surveys of traffic, foot traffic through airports, and so you're seeing this, I think, across the board. The other thing that I think is going on is, and this will play out pretty quickly, is I think the consumer did some front running on the tariff. So you saw a real boom in auto sales for a few weeks, that kind of thing. So I think consumers directed their spending to things that they thought were going to be affected by the tariffs. So we're stable, you know, as an airline and as an industry, but we're stable at levels that are lower than everyone expected 6 months ago.
Mm. My last question for you here, because I know you have an appointment coming up right after us here, is Herb Kelleher's vision was to make an airline that was affordable and accessible. Obviously, the airline has grown exponentially since then. You guys have a huge domestic map. What do you think he'd say about the transformation that you're leading right now, Bob?
You know, no one can speak for Herb, believe me.
Right.
But I think Herb, maybe I'd say it a different way. I think Herb saw a business opening, which was serve short-haul markets in the state of Texas and beyond. And I think his vision was to be a different kind of airline that treated you in a different way, that provided an unexpected level of service, had friendly people, and treated each other like family, and that fit with the business opportunity to serve short-haul markets in the state of Texas. So I think Herb would look at the airline and go, that core tenant is in place, the way you treat the customer, the hospitality provide, the way we're all smiling around here and treating each other. And those values, that quirkiness, those values that he started the airline with are completely intact here in 2025. And then everything else has to adapt, you know, as times change. I remember, you know, Herb would say, we'll never do that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he meant it. I think he did it as a way to get people to quit thinking about something. But I remember when I got here, he had said, we will never have a loyalty program. We will never change our boarding. We will have a long list of things. And so I don't think he'd be surprised at the number of things that we have had to change. And again, I think he simply used that as a tool to keep you focused on doing business at the time. Again, I go back to the Herb saying, you know, if you don't change, you die. Hmm. And it is so true. I mean, look at the companies that have gone by the wayside over the years that you know, it's the Blockbuster Video example.
Sure.
Consumers will never want anything but a VHS
tape. Yeah.
And if you don't change, your business opportunity will move away from you, and your customer will move away from you.
You mentioned the loyalty program. You guys have some really loyal customers here at Southwest. I would ask you this, since this is a political podcast, there's this legislation that's being talked about reducing these credit card swipe fees.
Yeah.
A lot of the airlines have come out and said, do not do this. Those are huge revenue makers, and it supports loyalty programs. That's a big deal.
Yeah, it points in the loyalty program is how millions of Americans afford to travel, whether using it for
guilty,
whether using it for the your flight or a hotel or your rental car or whatever.
Sure.
That's how you afford to do it, and it's basically just another piece of the business at the airline. And so what you're arguing is I need to take the choice away from the consumer. Nobody forces you to have a loyalty card or participate in a program. You're doing it because you want to and because you want to accrue points. And so I think it's anti-consumer to talk about taking away from people the very means that they used to book travel in the first place. So I just don't get it. And you'll have tens of millions, hundreds of millions of folks who will throw a fit over this. It's kind of the, you know, you you're going to pry my credit card away from my cold, dead fingers, right? So yeah. I just don't see it. I see it as anti-consumer.
Bob, last thing from me. During all this proxy battle with this activist investor, there was a memo that was circulated around that said that you'd said that this will be a battle for the heart of our company. Did you win the battle? Did they win the battle? Is the battle still being fought? Update us on that.
Yeah, I'd go back to what I said earlier, which is the battle wasn't for keep this person in their seat. The battle was for maintain control, which means keep the essence of the airline who we are. Because if you lose control, that is, you lose the board as an example, then nothing is sacred. The values of the company, the way you treat people, everything is on the table. And I'd argue everything from a product and other perspective needs to be on the table, but changing the heart of the airline, what we just talked about that Herb Kelleher put in place, that was not negotiable. And that's in place today. So in my mind, there's not a winner or loser. This is all about let's do what's best for Southwest Airlines. And the fact that we're sitting here a year later and we went through this really tough period with the activists and shareholders. We went through this tough continuing adjustment of the board, and we added more and more things to our transformational plan, and the board's in harmony. The board is supportive of the plan. We're making changes. They're coming at a faster and faster pace. It's what our customers want. Like I said, I was just in Denver. Our people are excited about the future. To me, that's winning. And that's not about Elliott. It's about the company.
Congrats on the transformation here. I know it's been a hell of a long run so far, and you have a lot of runway left.
There's more.
There's a lot more ahead. I can't wait to see the next big announcements for expansion, 5, 10 decades away, whenever that is. But you guys
not going to be decades.
I hope
away.
It's not that.
Feel free
far
to
away.
Announce it here when you come up with those things. And whoever transformed your pretzels, these Maui
like these?
Monk pretzels are amazing.
I'm going to crack mine open here.
Incredible. They're really good. I think we've helped this brand along, is my guess too.
I think
these are now in Costco, is what I've heard.
Wow.
So if you want a large bag of Maui Monk pretzels,
and maybe soon to be advertisers on Yellowtix, you know.
Who knows? Bob, thanks a lot. Congratulations.
Thank you all so much. No, it's been great.